step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 620. I think I'm Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by my co-host, the incredible, the incomparable, the mesmerizical Nicole Shiro.
Hello, that was quite an entrance.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. And during the pandemic, we are homegrown and pre-recorded.
Forget any troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
When life is a real again, and my old sense of humor has up and gone, it's time for the big switch again. I put a little more mascara on.
It is Wednesday, June 9th, 2021. On the show today, we have great folks from different stages and our longtime friend who we haven't heard for in a while, the Gigawatts Burlesque. And of course, we will have lively discussions of the world in of theater in Washington Heights, in Central Park, in Edinburgh, and other places. Stick with us. You know what? You can never have enough mascara, as far as I'm concerned.
I agree. I love that show. I love every song in that show. I just love that show.
It's a beautiful show. I did admit before we went on the air that I have never seen it. So no, shame on me. I know.
Did you see the movie version of Birdcage?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, of course.
I mean, it's not the same, but
But
it's
that
still a
is
lovely movie.
The movie that we're talking about is La Cage aux Folles. Well, not the movie. We're talking about the Broadway show is La Cage aux Folles, with one George Hearn, and others. And, I'm playing that because, and I don't know that we mentioned it last week, and we may have, but I think we need to continue to mention it. It is June and it is Pride Month. And there is so much going on with regards to Pride. We did talk about Pride because we talked about the parade. And we talked about Sing Out, which happened last week. And I just want to take a moment to acknowledge what a wonderful show that was.
Can we talk about that for a moment? Very exciting.
Yeah, it was a great show. And it had performers from all over the country, headlined by Beth Malone of Fun Home fame, as well as the unsinkable Molly Brown. And Angels in America. And I forgot that she was in Angels in America.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's some like heavy hitting credits there.
And what we don't have here, we talked about it in the interview and it was, and I meant to add it to our discussion because it was in the Broadway briefing, her stint. And I don't have it written here, so I can't remember the playwriter's workshop that she is doing her musical in with the Indigo Girl.
Yes. One of the Indigo Girls. She was in the Broadway briefing for that and for her Below 54 appearance that she talked about with us too. And I was like, well, look at you just everywhere. And this
so
is
you call it, you call it Below 54. I call it 54.
54 below. That's what I meant, but it came out backwards.
We all knew what you meant.
Sometimes so backwards is good.
There the headliners in this show, Sing Out, were marvelous. And shout out in particular to local folks, Kenny Williams, who this was the first time I got to work with, who's just a lovely man.
He's just like butter. Like
he is like
all
butter
all the way around as a person when he sings. Like every time he sang, I was like, gosh, he just makes me so happy.
And also locally, the phenom known as Rocky Lane, who is an incredible performer, host, yogi, as well as LGBTQ advocate. pop.
Yeah, and what an energy to be emceeing. Like, Rocky came out there and just brought the energy from the beginning to the end that I was just like, another, like, exciting, like, it was electric.
And finally, last but absolutely not least, Mila Sarah Jane Daly, who organized the whole thing. And is a Grammy winner, as we discussed, from her time at Conspirare. So they were all out there singing. Those voices blended so lovely together.
Boy, when they all sang together, it was, I mean, they were all wonderful on their own, but they together were very special the way they blended. It was a lovely sound.
Right. And with a finale that included about 150 choir folks from all over AISD, Out Youth, the Gay Men's Choir.
The Girl Scouts.
The Girl Scouts. And that was great.
Ripping
and
then Springs area also, besides the AISD
everywhere
folks.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty amazing. There was an after party that was sponsored by Aglyph, who we love. So,
yeah, Aglyph just kicked off. They just finished their, that was the beginning of their Pride Mini Film Fest.
Right. So we, it was a very prideful evening. It was touch and go there because of the rain, but the rain let up about 15 minutes before showtime. We were able to empty the parking lot of 40,000 gallons of water.
I was wondering how much it was. It was 40,000 gallons. Whoa.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. Oh boy. That was it's still 16,000 gallons of water.
That's still a lot.
Yeah. So it was an amazing thing. Hopefully there'll be more things like that.
It was just exciting to see. I mean, I know we were in a parking lot and we were outside, but it was exciting to see hundreds of people sitting and smiling. And when moments were happening, looking at across, watching other people and take, it's that connection that you always talk about, Lisa. You saw everybody taking that in as much as the performance. And that was also very lifting for the soul.
People are thirsty for entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're happy to do it. So we continue to celebrate Pride. And then we have also a Juneteenth coming up, and we might do something special for that as well. I should talk about just real quickly, Broadway HD. Did you see what they've got coming this month?
No, maybe I did, and I'm now not remembering.
Well, Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yeah.
One of your favorites, and I thought I could link it. I thought I had.
I almost gave you one of those songs to play today, but I didn't. Because I tore you with it all the time.
Well, yeah, and I would have said no. But one song I am going to play later, if we have time, is from Brooklyn the Musical, which is also going to be done on Broadway HD. I should say the Hedwig performance on Broadway HD is not a theater. It's the film that they made. Mm-hmm. So slightly different. Brooklyn, on the other hand, is a performance of Brooklyn. We were going to do it at the theater. I've never seen it, but I do know the music. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. It is a show within a show.
That's what I was about to say. Is this the one, the show within a show? Okay.
It is indeed, but I'm looking forward to seeing it. So the Tony Awards are coming up, and the New York Times, Jesse Green, did a article called "A Chance to Fix the Tonys and So Many Things to Fix."
Yeah, I know. I laughed at the title. I was like, do I really need to read it? Don't I know?
Well, but you don't. Did you read the article?
I started reading it and I was like, oh, okay.
He's actually pro the way it's being laid out this time, yeah, which is in two things. What he is saying with this is that it has gotten very, very, very commercialized. And the people that have the least amount of exposure in the current Tony broadcast are the performers.
Mm-hmm.
I marked everything up with my Microsoft Surface Pro and its pen.
How scholarly of you, Lisa.
Yes. Well, I don't do that very often. But it's interesting. So our 2021 Tonys, as we have discussed, are really the 2020 Tonys. But so they talked about the myriad of musical numbers and things like that. For instance, I didn't realize this. And then in 2014, Jennifer Hudson sang Finding Neverland, which wasn't nominated that year.
Yeah, we remember that. We talked about it like that was random.
Yeah. One of the lines from Jesse's article is says, now we accept that the Tonys are an industry marketing tool and the honorees are merely bait, which I think that's interesting. And again, he says that the artists are the bottom of the list. And he thinks that this is solved in many ways by having this split show. So they have one show that's the razzmatazz that people see. And then there's another show that honors the artists.
Right. Which, but that's the one that isn't for the public to see and that you have to pay for. So you already have to like the artist to be a part of that. So then it defeats the whole purpose.
Yeah. I totally do not agree with Jesse Green on this one. I mean, I agree with him in his
assessment of how we've turned it commercialized. Totally. Because I recently was just pulling up old Tony performances going, we were talking about Patrick Wilson when we watched Midway a few weeks ago. And I'm like, yo, he's Broadway guy. And I was pulling up Tony performances. And even looking at performances from as far, like as early as 2004, 2010, it was so different. It was so different how we got excited about people who weren't these commercialized film people. And we were excited about the artists doing the art.
Yep.
It was a bummer. I noticed it. It was a bummer.
Totally agree. And, so I hope they don't take his advice in a lot of ways, but I hope they do take his advice in that let's focus on the artists. He does say, let's get rid of the hosts that don't have any Broadway cred or that the Broadway cred is tangential versus what they make their life doing. You know, yeah. Let's have Laura Benanti host the Tonys.
I mean, I love the Groves and Sarah Bareilles, but I found that weird that they were hosting after they had only done those one things. And like, that wasn't their jam. Their jam is music. And they came over they're known for music, even though they may have.
But I'll tell you what, they do have choices that they could do. Laura Benanti is one, but even more so, Jesse Green brings up Billy Porter.
Exactly.
Or Meryl Streep. All these people have great Broadway credits. And those two people in particular have a wide appeal. And I would argue that Laura Benanti, I think most people would recognize her, but may not know her name aren't in the theater.
Then they'll see her and go, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I mean, Idina Menzel is another one. People would know who she is, and longstanding career and crossed over and household name.
Yep. So, her selling out the Lawn Center here.
I know. I like Billy Porter. That would be fun.
Billy Porter would be fine. And he's on fire right now. So
he's on fire.
That would be a no brainer. So let's jump to our first interview, shall we, with the Jigglewatts.
Let's do it.
So we haven't talked to Jigglewatts in years. I know. Ruby Jewell and her band of merry mistresses of shenanigans and the other things she talked about are coming.
I love shenanigans.
Yeah, are going to start performing again. So let's just listen to that interview.
Let's.
Nicole Shiro, we're so lucky to have in our Zoom machine here the folks from the Jigglewatts and our very old and dear, well, not old, but our very dear friend, Ruby Jewell. Hi, Ruby.
Hello. So happy to see you all again.
You know, I just dawned on me. Do I call you Ruby or is it always Ruby Jewell? Do we have to have the whole name?
You know, I've started kind of going more by Ruby Jewell just for ease of clarification, because there is another Ruby in my troupe, and there are lots of other performers, burlesque performers named Ruby nowadays. So,
okay. So Ruby Jewel it is. And we also have
Ruby Jewel it is.
So also we have with us Something Blue. And do I call you Something, or do I call you Blue, or do I call you Something Blue?
You can call me, you can call me Blue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show. And we haven't had you on in probably several years, certainly not during the pandemic, but you guys are performing again. And you're having your 15-year anniversary.
Yes. Isn't that wild? 15 years. But I say it's in showgirl years. So that's only like 5 years.
I'm going to take that. So then I'm really only 25 years old in showgirl years.
Absolutely. And relationships last a lot longer because, you know, time goes slower. So a 15-year relationship feels like, you know, 5 years, 6 years. Well,
Ruby Jewel, tell us about the show. What is it?
Well, this is the first time that we are coming back onto the stage live in, what is it, 16 months, Blue?
I counted it up. It's 16 months. Yeah.
And
the last time we were on stage was February of 2020, right?
2020.
Yeah, right. 2020.
What is time? What are numbers?
I don't know.
So it's in part, it's a reunion for all of us. And we have some alumna coming back to the stage who are no longer officially with our troupe, but they're coming back to play with us. And we have some special guests. And it's also going to be a big whopping reunion with our audience. In addition to a celebration of 15 years of, wow, we're still doing this.
That is amazing. So for people that may not be familiar with the Jigglewatts or familiar with what a burlesque show is in general, what can an audience expect to see when they come see the show?
That is a really good question because there is sometimes some confusion about what burlesque is because there's just so many different versions of it. There's so many different genres and performers have their own ideas about what it is. But in general, for a Jigglewatt show, you're going to see high glamour, theatrical dancing with a tasteful element of tease involved. So there will be glove removals and gown removals and very fancy spangled underwear and costume pieces that become very small as the dance goes on.
By the way, spangled underwear was my sorority name in college.
He's a good name for spangled underwear.
Oh, keep going. Sorry.
You
don't have to. I thought you might have more.
There's a lot of, I think there's going to be a lot of variety in this show in terms of types of performers and the individual creativity that they bring to the stage, their styles, body types. I think the variety and the entertainers also keeps it interesting.
Awesome. And Blue, are you one of the performers?
I am one of the performers and I'm also co-producing the show.
Oh, yes.
So Ruby and I are working together to kind of make it all happen. And, you know, I've kind of put together the lineup and, you know, I'm making sure that everybody knows where to be and when and all that kind of stuff. But I will also be doing a brand new act.
Oh, awesome. That's good. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's going to be a kind of classic burlesque mermaid act. And I've been working on the costume for 2 years at this point.
Oh my.
Because of last year, and I had already been working on it for a long time at that point. But I've been, you know, kind of rushing to the finish line. You know, I'm making, sewing on beads by hand and gluing rhinestones and, you know, solving problems and making sure that everything comes off properly and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it's all about beads and rhinestones. If you're not properly bedazzled, I'm guessing you're not doing burlesque.
Amen.
You have to be seen from the back of the theater, y'all.
Yeah.
In the dark.
So I know, Ruby, you mentioned that you have alumna coming back, but I think you have other special guests as well that aren't necessarily from Jigglewatts, or did I misread that?
Yes, we do. That is correct. Actually, since Blue is really kind of driving the bus on this show, Blue, do you want to talk about our guests?
Sure. Yes, we have two Gigawatts alum coming back, Coco Electric, who is co-founder of the troupe, along with Ruby Jewell.
Who has been on this show?
I was like, she's been on.
She's a treasure, and we're so excited to have her back on stage. She's doing one of her signature acts. I believe she's going to do her Big Bad Boa. So it's an award-winning act, also performed to some local music by the Bright Light Social Hour. And then we'll also have another Gigawatt, Lady Lola Lestrange will be joining us. And then we'll also have guests, not Gigawatt alums, but much loved by the Gigawatts, Blaze Ryson and Anastasia Arsenic. And then we'll have a host. Our host will be comedian Miss Fahrenheit.
Awesome. I love it. I love that. Yeah. Miss Fahrenheit, and she's hot.
She is, yes. And she's funny too. So
and hysterical.
Yes.
Well, you know, it all comes back to me. People say I'm funny as well, but I just want to remind everybody that looks are not everything.
Hey, I thought I made that one up
there.
Ruby, are you doing a special premiere performance for this anniversary? Are you reprising a classic?
I am actually doing an Austin premiere of an act that I have performed only a couple of times. And I am bringing along with me for the first time in Austin, my champagne glass.
That's exciting. I've always
wanted that I get in
champagne glass.
It's the life-size one that I get to get into.
Yes, that's why I'm so excited. That is, I've always been my dream. You are living my dream. That's everything.
Well, I hope there's much bubble finesse in your act.
There will be some kind of manageable mess happening.
Right. Well, we are so happy that you're getting ready to perform in front of people. We know that's just thrilling for a lot of us. That's starting to eke into our lives. Where and when is this happening?
It is going to be June 17th at the Sterling Events Center, and we're actually having two shows. We sold out our 8 p.m. show almost immediately, and so we were scrambling to add another encore performance, so we'll have another show at 11 p.m., and tickets for that are still available.
That is always a good problem to have, that you need to add another show. And where can folks get information and find out about this show?
They can visit our website, www.thejigglewattsburlesque.com. And there's all kinds of information about the troupe and our schedule and where to find us, all that on that page.
Awesome. And awesome. I will tell you that they could do it the way I did it, which was just go to the search bar and say Gigawatts. And I found it pretty quickly.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, good. That's good to know.
That's nice when you're up at the top.
Yep. Before we sign off, is there anything that you want to talk about? What's happening for the future? What you're doing? Oh, let me go back to this. Is there any kind of COVID mitigation that you guys are expecting for your audience? And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I can tell you about that. We are doing table seating only. So that means that each table is basically a singular household or party that is comfortable being together. And that also means that we are able to space the tables out a little bit more. So we will be able to have the tables socially distanced, and the audience will be required to wear masks, regardless of their vaccination status or whatever. Hopefully we can all, you know, have a nice, happy time together and, you know, feel a little bit normal for a nice evening.
Will there be refreshments available for the audience?
Oh, yes. The Sterling Event Center has a full bar, and we'll also be having some cocktail specials based on the theme of the crystal anniversary, since 15 years is the crystal anniversary. So we'll have some champagne cocktails on special, and then also it'll be a full bar. So whatever you want.
Well, awesome. And so let me know about anything you have upcoming in the future that you want to just tell folks about.
Oh, goodness. I mean, we're out of practice of thinking ahead.
I know. I was thinking about that this weekend. I was like, I wonder if we should figure out July.
Yeah. Yes. So I would recommend, if people want to keep updated with our activities and shenanigans, go to our website and get on our mailing list, because we'll be letting everybody know as soon as we have more dates. And also, the Gigglewatts is spelled J-I-G-G-L-E. WATTS.
That's an important distinction. They can also go to our website, offstageonair.com, and see the show notes for this show, and they'll get that information as well. They can just click from there. So I just need to know, is there are there different mailing lists for activities and shenanigans?
So far, no. We are keeping that all in one capsule.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming back onto Offstage and On the Air. Let's not make it as long as it was last time. Let's get you back on sooner next time.
Agreed. It's a deal.
Thanks so much for having us.
Awesome. Thank you. We love me some Ruby Jewel. I don't think
Jewel
we talked.
Something Blue came out to play with us. That was so great.
Yeah, Something Blue is amazing. It sounds like a lot of fun. I was going to go, but I... you know, as mentioned, there weren't tickets available for the 8 o'clock show. And this girl is asleep at 11 o'clock.
Bummeroo, but you know what that means? They'll have to do more.
They'll have to do more. I don't believe we mentioned it in the interview, but if we did, I'm just going to repeat it. Ruby Jewel, I don't know if it's giving away any secrets to say her given name, so I'm not. But we performed together in my old theater in House of Yes together.
We talked about it, but we didn't during the interview. It was before we recorded. That's so cool. I love that. And
yeah, and she's an amazing performer. It's sad to see her go as a performer for theater. So maybe she'll consider doing something every now and again.
Well, she's busy with the shenanigans, which we also do need. So, but yeah, it would be nice to see her back dip her little toe in the theatrical pond too.
Agreed. Let's take a little break and let's listen to a song from Brooklyn, which I'll decide what it is later. Here it is.
I've never sung you a lullaby. You can fly above the rain cloud.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air. I think I'm still Lisa.
And I think I'm still Nicole.
As a reminder, folks, during the pandemic, these puppies are pre-recorded. So I have a question for you, Nicole Shearer. What are you doing Thursday night, tomorrow night?
I don't know. What am I doing?
Well, I'm sitting in front of my big screen television set and watching Anthony Ramos in the Heights.
I was like, is it the In the Heights night? Because I was like, I got to double check what day that is. It's on a streaming service I have. Did you get my text the other day? I'm like, Lisa, I have this and this is my favorite musical. This is exciting.
I did, but I'm actually thinking about inviting some folks over to the Casa, or even more, maybe going to the theater and watching it on the big screen with the big sound.
Well, I have to tell you, that sounds exciting. And even mom emailed me and was like, this cast is phenomenal. I'm excited. And I was like, yeah, mom, I love this show.
Yeah, it's me as well. And I'm very excited about the person playing Uzami. Uzami is Anthony Ramos. Folks who have seen Hamilton will know him as John Lawrence and young Hamilton. I forgot his name already. but I'm looking forward to it. Lin-Manuel Miranda, or as I heard someone introduce him last night, Lin-Manuel Miranda. I don't know. He's Lin-Manuel. Is playing the Piragua guy. So he's making a cameo. And let's see who else. I forgot who
Isn't
else
that
is in
mean Ruba Vega in it from Rent?
She is indeed. She's playing Daniela. Jimmy Smits is in it. Here's someone I've never heard of. Somebody named Christopher Jackson is in it. Folks will know him.
I told mom. So mom did watch Hamilton. She never told me she actually watched Hamilton. And she goes, is George Washington who you love? Because I do love him. But she fell in love with Leslie Odom Jr. and finally gets it now. I'm like, hello, mom.
Okay, so here's some people that that I didn't know were in it. You probably did. Patrick Page is in it.
I knew that, but I can't figure out where or what or have seen a clip. But I read that and went.
He does not have a character name on. Is just his name and picture. Abuela Claudia is played by Olga Meredes. I'm just seeing if there's anybody else that I recognize. You probably know a lot more of these people, but I'm just looking so forward to seeing this show.
You and me both.
I was thinking about this the other day, last night, which we're going to talk about a little bit. I watched the Kennedy Center Honors last night. And I will remind folks that Nicole and I record this on Monday. So Kennedy Center Honors was on Sunday night, which is pretty amazing. But it made me think of Mary Poppins, because Dick Van Dyke was honored. And more important, or to more apropos to what we're talking about, is Mary Poppins Returns, which I was so disappointed in, but I was like at the first showing, I wanted to see it so badly.
It really did make you sad. I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh, but you were really chapped about that.
Just not good at all. Other than the performance by what's her name?
Emily
Skinner. No.
Blunt.
Thank you. But so In the Heights Thursday night, it's on a service. You can discover which one by Googling it.
Yes. It's in the theaters and some theaters also. So
it is also in the theaters. Correct.
You could go see it in the theaters or you could get it via the streaming services.
So speaking of streaming services and something that I keep forgetting to talk about this, but we're going to take less than a minute to talk about this.
Okay.
But High School Musical, the series.
Okay, I saw a preview for this and I actually was fascinated by it. I was like, why do I want to watch this?
It is on Disney Plus. It is indeed called officially High School Musical, the series.
And is it like little Derek Hough from Dancing with the Stars? Did I see him at one point in?
Maybe.
I saw him in one preview. I've seen like four previews and I'm like, this actually looks good. Hello. I stopped and rewound to watch the dang preview again.
Well, I decided to watch it. It is on a streaming service, Disney Plus. I suppose they're not saying anything out of school by saying that. So here's a list of people that are in it. Olivia Rodrigo, Joshua Bassett, Matt Cornett, Sophia Wiley, Larry Saperstein. You know, that's Mr. and Mrs. Saperstein's little boy. And others. It's actually been on for 2 seasons.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. I found out it wasn't new, and I'm like, why are these commercials just drawing me in now?
So this is a series about a high school doing High School Musical, the musical.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yes. So if people don't know, and you correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't think I know. So there was High School Musical, the movie, parts 1, 2, and 3. And then there was a live musical called High School Musical, the musical.
Correct.
That is done quite often in high schools.
Correct.
And now there is High School Musical, the series, which is a series about a high school doing a production of High School Musical, the musical.
Apparently. So we're just going to go inside the musical and the musical and the musical. And the
it's
musical
like, and the musical. It's like meta. So what I discovered is someone that I believe only saw High School Musical movie once, the first time, none of the sequels, and saw High School Musical, the musical several times as my role of adjudicator for the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards. Not quite for me. So
it's what made Zac Efron and Vanessa Hudgens. Zac Efron and Vanessa Hudgens.
So if you are a fan of those shows, I think you will like this series quite a bit.
That's so funny you brought this up, because I actually like stopped, watched preview. I'm like, and I was like, who am I telling that I got sucked into these commercials? But apparently you, Lisa, who knew?
So I think I did two episodes in, and I think I might be done, but it's there.
Have you watched Halston?
No, I'm just talking
about Halston. I'm just wondering if you watched it or not.
I tried to watch it.
Okay.
Didn't do anything for me. Okay. So let's jump into our next interview with different stages and an all-star cast of directors. And which is
Ed Lenning and Nikki Zook.
Nikki Zook. I stumbled because I studied theater as a youngster with Zeta Shook. And Zeta Shook, if you're out there and listening, love to hear back from you. We were in at Studio 7 together in Houston. Oh, Nikki awesome. Zook and Ev Lunning, as well as Norman Blumensaat. Let's give it a listen.
Let's.
Nicole, remember, just a few weeks ago, we had different stages on the show talking about their Zoom production of doing two different. Oh, my God, I forgot exactly who they were, but they had the same first name and different last names, or the other way around.
Sting plus Barry.
That's right. It was JM's.
Jay and Barry.
Yes, exactly. Zing, well, they are, and you're hearing their voices right now, and they
they're
are with
back
us
for more.
They're back for more, and so we have once again Norman Blumensaat, the artistic director of Different Stages. Hi, Norman.
Hello.
And then we have the two directors of the two pieces, in no particular order. Nikki Zook. Hi, welcome back, Nikki.
Hello.
And Ev Lunning.
Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you again.
Oh.
So this is another dual Zoom show with my very dear friend, Eugene O'Neill, doing In the Zone, and Susan Glaspell's Trifles. Let's just take them one by one. Who's directing O'Neill?
Ev.
I'm guilty. So I'm doing In the Zone.
You're guilty.
We've had experience with O'Neill in two different ways. We did Our Wilderness at St. Edward's University several years ago. And then we did a vanity production of Long Day's Journey Into Night.
I just love that show. I have to tell you. It's one of my faves.
Yes, if you ever feel too happy, you can always go to that show and it will set you to rights immediately.
And I did that show when I was a very young person, a teenager, and I got some of my best vocabulary from it.
Yes, indeed.
But we're not doing Long Day's Journey tonight. We're doing In the Zone, which I'm not familiar with.
Actually, if you listen to Eugene's speeches from Long Day's Journey Into Night, you get part of his experience as O'Neill went to sea after he dropped out of Princeton in defiance of his father. And that he was at sea for a couple of years. And he used the experience as he gained as a merchant seaman in a set of plays that he, they were set aboard the British tramp steamer SS Glen Cairn.
That's where I was stationed.
Right, and a jolly old ship it was. So they were published under the title Moon of the Caribbees, which was the title of one of the plays. But In the Zone is set in the fall of 1915, when World War I is underway and German submarines are laying waste to British shipping. So the men aboard the SS Glen Cairn have just been informed that they are in the war zone and they could be blown up in any minute.
So I'm going on the assumption that this is an all male identified cast.
All male identified cast.
Awesome. And who are some of our actors that are in it?
Let's see if I can remember them.
Gary Peters.
Playing this, one of the central characters is Gary Peters, who had fun working with in Norman's production of John Gabriel Borkman. And then I recruited several actors from St. Edward's University. First of all, an alum who played the lead in Our Wilderness, Nigel O'Hearn, who's in town doing a PhD at UT. And then, let's see, Jackson Pant,
Wes Smith,
Owen Ziegler, who was in our production of The Dresser, and Weston Smith, Santiago Facundo, and who's the next one?
Well, I have it here.
I have it right here.
I have Owen Ziegler, Nigel O'Hearn, Gary Peters, Weston Smith, Santiago Facundo, and Jackson Pant.
And that's the cast. And
there you go.
So Santiago and Gary play two characters. There are two characters in the opening who are then called up on deck to their duties and don't appear in the main action.
Well, awesome. I want to make sure that we're mindful of time. And so let me just ask you, let's just switch gears. We'll talk a little bit about the other play, Trifles, written by, I lost her name, Susan Glasspell. And Nikki, you are directing that and a marvelous cast. So tell us a little bit about that show.
Well, let's see. It takes place in Nebraska, in rural Nebraska, in the early 1900s, also around the 1915-1916 winter. And these people are neighbors with the, I guess you'd call them suspect and victim. There has been a death that the county attorney and the sheriff are investigating, and the ladies, the neighbor's wife and the sheriff's wife are tasked with small things like bringing the suspect some clothing from home because they were taken into custody, and it was very abrupt. So these women are while they're going through these articles and they're discovering possibly a motive for the crime, and they're also discovering a little bit of empathy for the suspect at the same time. So it's a very interesting piece.
That does sound interesting. Like the whole, it's taking place while they're going through the stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's supposed to just be the kitchen stuff, and it has the sheriff has already looked at the stuff and he doesn't see anything that's related to the crime, but the ladies are looking at the details and they're seeing things that the guys just missed, and I find that very fascinating.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. So tell us a little bit about your cast. Who's in the show?
I have some brilliant people that I've worked with in the past. I have Carrie Ramsey, who I did some internet web series stuff with. He's brilliant. He's playing our county attorney. I have Tony Salinas, brilliant. Loved him. Worked with him in a different stages production, Too Many Husbands. We have Chelsea Manasseri and Michelle Alexander, both of whom I worked with during Sing Muse. And we also have Dennis Weaver, not that Dennis Weaver, God rest his soul, but this is a guy that I've worked with in the past during some training stuff. So
that all sounds amazing. Norman, can you tell me why you paired these two pieces together?
Well, so the whole idea in the trying to plan, what can one do this year without spending an awful lot of money? Although we have spent money, but not very much, so I went to public domain. So the Dickens is in public domain, both the Sing and the Barry are in public domain, and both of these plays are in public domain. Originally, I was thinking of calling these two plays from the Provincetown Playhouse, although that would probably mean nothing to anyone who knew theater. Because both of these playwrights got started at the Provincetown Playhouse, but In the Zone was done at the Washington Square Playhouse in New York first. But they're, you know, they're both sort of the time period. And the other reason is Different Stages has done two different O'Neills. We did his first Pulitzer Prize, Beyond the Horizon, in 1976, and Long Day's Journey into Night in 1990. And I had been thinking about doing another O'Neill. So that's why we went to the O'Neill. And it's interesting because the other thing that's fascinating about both of these playwrights is they both won the Pulitzer Prize. Susan Glasspell was only the second woman playwright to ever win the Pulitzer Prize. O'Neill won the Pulitzer Prize four times for Beyond the Horizon, Long Day's Journey into Night, Anna Christie, and all 6 hours of Strange Interlude, which was his biggest running play of all time on Broadway at 400 performances.
That's amazing. Actually, that's amazing for the time frame in which that happened. Yeah. We don't have a whole bunch of time left, but I want to know the these two playwrights were contemporaries. Did they know each other, do you think?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, they did. I was just thinking that. I was like, did they know each other or?
Yes, yes, they knew each other at Provincetown. So.
Well, that is amazing. And so this is done via Zoom. How can folks get information?
To go to the Different Stages website.
Which is differentstages.org?
Theater.org.
Theater.org with an R-E. And when will these begin streaming?
Friday night at 7:30 will be the live stream, and then it will be up for a week on the Different Stages YouTube channel.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Most welcome. It's been a treat.
It always is. So I'm looking forward to seeing these shows. I'm especially looking forward to seeing the Eugene O'Neill piece because I've never heard of that one. And I fancied myself as a Eugene O'Neill fan for a short while.
Until the plays got too long.
This one's
just over 30 minutes, so it'll
be a, really.
In fact,
oh, that they, thank you. That
it's,
was
it's a, extraordinary. But in the 1917, it was picked up by vaudeville companies.
Yeah,
because that, it was of a limited length, and it was also melodramatic, and in the time it expressed anti-German sentiments.
It
became such a success that O'Neill raised enough money to get married for the first time.
Awesome. Oh, wow. That's actually another question that I totally meant to ask. So these performances are going together. So you've just said that the Eugene O'Neill piece is a half an hour. How long is Trifles?
About the same.
Right about the same.
Right, half an hour.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Oh, wow.
And Susan Glasspool based Trifles on a real murder case because she was also a reporter, as well as being a playwright and writing novels. So it's based on a real incident.
Sounds wonderful. I'm looking forward to seeing them both.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
There it is. Eugene O'Neill. The idea of a 30-minute Eugene O'Neill boggles the mind, if you ask me.
When Ev said it was 30 minutes, I was kind of like, what? And both of those sound very fascinating and different. And especially like when they're set at the same time and just such different story. I think it's fascinating. I'm excited.
So there were a couple of stories this week about some outdoor festivals that I think is interesting. One is at the Delcourt in New York City. The Shakespeare in the Park is coming in. The Delcourt, people will know or should know or may know, or is an 1800 seat auditorium that they have to do social distancing in. And bringing it down to 428 seats. So I'd like to reiterate that this is an outdoor stage.
Yeah.
But other New York venues like Radio City Music Hall mm-hmm. have less strict requirements.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't figure this one out. I was like, are they smoking something good or did they pull something out of a fishbowl? I'm very confused.
Right. So so Radio City Music Hall is going to open this month, full house, maskless, vaccinated ticket holders.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, to go to Shakespeare in the Park, you have to show proof of a COVID test or vaccination to get in, and you have to wear a mask. And you're outdoors.
You have to be separate from other people.
And you have to be separate from other people.
Yeah.
I mean, makes no sense.
And you wonder why people are confused by what rules are in places or what to do or why it's one place and the other. And like, all you do is cause more confusion right. for people.
And it's possible that could change by opening night because the reason why they're doing it is because of city regulations.
Right.
So we'll see. But the interesting thing is it's a one act version of Merry Wives of Windsor with an all black cast set in Harlem. Directed by Sahim Ali, and it's the story of Falstaff. and a trickster seeking to woo married women out to outwit him. So I think that's
So they're just doing one act of the whole show, or are they pairing
it's
it
down? It's adapted. It's pairing it down.
That's what I was trying to figure out. Okay.
So what's also interesting is there's no waiting in line like we've done in the past. Everything's going to be done with a digital lottery.
Interesting. I mean, yes. That they should just keep all the time. Let's just face it. Like,
totally agree, comma, and waiting in line at the Delcourt is an event. I was
like, there's something kind of exciting about waiting in line as a tradition, like a rite of passage, almost, so to speak.
Well, but it's, you go there, you get a blanket and a picnic table, and you're there all day long. People in your party come and go. I mean, it's bad for people like me who have no friends and go by themselves. I'd have to sit there by myself. The other festival that's interesting is the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Therein, did you read this article about they may not make it? Because
I saw that and it got me very upset and sad.
Yeah, so they had to cancel last year. And this year they're being forced to have a lot of social distancing. And that's going to, they think, according to the organizers, it may be the death knell for Edinburgh Fringe Festival. They're only allowed to host a maximum of 100 people. And last year they canceled. It was the first time in 75 years they canceled. So they are going to have, it's going to happen in August, the 6th through the 30th. I learned, in reading, because, you know, I read, Forbes religiously. It's one of the newspapers I read.
Because you're a smart cookie.
But did you know that Rodgers and Hammerstein's songbook brings in more money than almost everybody, including Bob Dylan and Paul Simon?
Is that nuts? I read that and I'm like, actually, doesn't surprise me when I really stop and think about it, but I found that spectacular.
So they have been in the top tier of money-making songs forever. Mm-hmm. I should say that they died 40 and 59 years ago.
Yeah.
They have some 300 songs, and they are just continually to make money on it.
Like leading the list. I was blown away by that, Lisa. And I mean, it makes sense, but at the same time, when you just look at the names next to each other, your mouth is like, what? But so it makes sense.
Yeah, their song catalog is worth $350 million.
Woo!
As just,
or should I say, zing!
They're the third ranking catalog next to the Beatles and Michael Jackson.
I was about to say it was Michael Jackson, I think, right? Yeah, that's nuts.
Isn't that amazing?
Doesn't Michael Jackson own the Beatles catalog too?
I think he does, yes. Or his estate, yeah.
Yeah.
They outrank Elton John, Taylor Swift, Bruce Springsteen, Stevie Wonder, Billy Joel. I just find it amazing.
I mean, that's a testament to their work.
It is. So as a quiz, do you know how many years they worked together?
Wasn't it like a short span?
They worked together for 17 years. That's a pretty lengthy. Yeah. So they had 11 musicals and six of them were huge successes.
Yeah. I mean, not just huge, but huge.
Yeah.
I told you their shows are not my favorite shows, but the music, I just love a lot of music from those.
I think I told you that I remember I went to one of the high school performances of Oklahoma, which we all know how I feel about Oklahoma, but it was one of these high school musicals that brought in a whole bunch of professionals to the orchestra. But when that overture kicked in, I was almost in tears.
Isn't it amazing that the power of the instruments can play? Like the swell of an orchestra is one of the top three greatest sounds in my book in life is the swell of an orchestra. It's just so powerful.
Agreed. Well, on that lovely note, that is the end of our show. Nicole and I will see all of you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air.
Au revoir.
Lights up on Washington Heights, up at the break of day. I wake up and I got this little punk I gotta chase away. Pop the grade at the crack of dawn, sing while I wipe down the awning. Hey y'all, good morning.
Ice coffee agua. Parcha, china, cherry, strawberry, and just for today, I got mamey.
Oye, Piragüero, ¿cómo estás?
Como siempre, señor Usnavi.